Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, bound car, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing. Hey, boss. You know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him, and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Elton.
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. Dean needed a friend, and so here I am. Good morning, and welcome to Dean's show, and I am here to fill in. I appreciate his trust in me to talk to you this morning, and we're going to have some fun over the next 4 hours. I hope you will certainly stick with me. I do have to christen, since Dean is not here today. It's always fun to officially christen the studio without him here because I know how much he hates my cashmere woods. But if you listen to me with any kind of regularity, you know that I love the scent of Cashmere Woods by Glade. And just so you know, it's a little lily, it's a little lily of the valley, some jasmine, little sandalwood, amber, vanilla bean, oak moss, and musk.
Just what we need on a cold morning like this.
Exactly. Schwanaroo is with me. Hi, good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Okay, okay.
And
good.
Andy on the sports department.
Yeah, just what we need for me in another studio. All right. Working out well.
That's why I'm alone in here. As soon as I bring out the cashmere wood, Schwanny and Andy leave immediately.
Bail.
2 minutes ago, they were in here. We were all talking, having a good time, and then I pulled out the cashmere woods, and they left like a bomb had just dropped.
We have a newsroom to run.
Ah, what a great way to start a Sunday. So we have the usual cast of characters here. Now, Dean is away. Do we actually know where Dean is this morning?
I do not. I heard
I don't.
L.A. I heard I don't know. I heard a number of
Tijuana.
Sure.
I don't know where he went, but he may actually be calling in today. He usually likes to get me off schedule right away. So we will see. But whenever he's away, he's never far away. But as I said, I'm here till 1 o'clock doing a lot of the same kinds of things that you'll get from Dean. We will be talking to Mike Hammernick, of course, and getting a little update on the weather, which certainly is a an interesting news item. Like you said, Schwanny, wow, what a shock from, say, 11 o'clock yesterday morning till 5 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been a topsy-turvy weekend with the snow and then the freezing rain, and now the coldest temperatures so far of the season. We're looking at 5 above at O'Hare, wind chill index 11 below. That's a little bit better than it was when we got in earlier this morning.
Yeah, I was slushing. I was half shoveling, half slushing away my walk, and then by the end of the night, I was slipping on the sidewalk.
Yeah, there's no slush out there.
Yeah,
now.
No slush.
no slushy, slurpy stuff.
Although what I did realize as I was pushing the water in the slushy snow yesterday off my front walk, you know, I love Mio, you know, that water enhancer Mio.
Yeah.
And so what I found is that if you take some Mio while the snow is melting, you put that right into the slush, and you've got a delicious sidewalk dessert for people walking by your house.
No, wait a minute. Dessert?
Yeah, if someone has a straw. someone has an extra straw.
You know, people, I wouldn't recommend.
You know, yeah. No. People, you know, nowadays everybody is very, you know, environmentally conscious. People bring their own straws now. You know, it's not good enough to just get a plastic straw at a restaurant. People have their own metal straws or their own, you know, paper straws. So I just thought, I saw so much water in front of my house. I said, well, why not? If someone's going to be brave enough to be walking out here, you know, you're walking along, you start to get a little thirsty, need a little hydration. So by my front stairs, I had some fruit punch, Mio. And then the water that was around the little sidewalk that leads to the street where you would park your car, I threw in a little berry pomegranate. So
thank goodness you didn't use lemonade.
No.
Because I would keep on walking.
That would definitely keep people walking.
Yeah, don't drink the yellow snow.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't just eat it. Don't drink it. But wow, what a difference that was. As I said, to go out in what a matter of 4 or 5 hours. And I give all the women in Chicago a huge high five. Yesterday was the Women's March down here, downtown, and it certainly was not the best of weather. It wasn't as bad as it could have been later in the day, but it certainly was a slushy, kind of ugly kind of day. And yet the women here in Chicago, as well as around the country, certainly came out in full force for the annual Women's March. We still had a somewhat of a busy weekend here. So now here on Sunday, big stuff going on. Andy, of course, football playoffs.
Yes, sir.
So we will talk about that a little later in the show. We've got, of course, Dave Schwann with his far-flung forecast. Around 10:30 or so, there's a show that's produced here locally in Chicago that goes over the nation called Collector's Call. It's hosted by Lisa Welchel, who, of course, is Blair from Facts of Life. And so the show just premiered its second season last weekend. It's on every Sunday at 8:30 here on Channel 23. And I wanted to talk to her about that, not only because I am a collector, and so I thought it'd be interesting to promote this show, which is produced right here in Chicago. But interesting sidelight, which we will talk about. Over the summer, Lisa came to my house and filmed my collection. So I'm going to be on one of the episodes. I don't know when.
Let me guess what the collection is centered
around. What do you
around?
Think? My nickname is Elton Jim, so let's take it from there.
Yeah, we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, I have a Dean connection because I was on in the summer. Dean came to my house when the Rocket Man film was released, and he came to my house showing some of my collection. And the people from Collector's Call were watching the Channel 9 news, and they saw me up there, and they said, "Wait a minute, there's a collector with some cool stuff." So they contacted me a couple of days later, and so they came out and in the summer, and they did a whole. Four, five, six, 7 hours at my home. They had three camera crews going and interviewed my wife. And
did they bring someone else in that?
An appraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
To appraise or maybe make a trade, perhaps?
Well, exactly. Hey, Schwanna, you know the show.
Yeah.
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 So that's what they do. They bring an appraiser in, and then at the end, as a little kind of added bonus, they bring in an item that I might want to trade from my collection.
Right.
So I won't ruin
it with anything.
Yeah, well, unless they brought Elton John out to say he's going to sing a song, I don't know what I would trade for. I was like, you know, you've got quite a difficult chore there to find something that I would trade something from my collection. But it was a really cool experience, and so we'll be talking to Lisa. And as I mentioned to her in the interview, I did record it, so just so you know, it's not live. But when I did speak to her earlier this week, she had to at the house. They said, "Well, Lisa will need a room to do her makeup and hair." And so we do have a little extra room that my wife uses in the morning to get ready. So now that room has officially been christened the Blair Room.
The Blair Room.
That's the Blair Room.
If you have a guest overnight to sleep overnight at your house, they will be invited to stay in the Blair Room.
The Blair Room, exactly. Oh, do we have somebody on the line here? Who could it be? Is that Dino?
Is this Jim?
Big Dean, when you're away, you're never far away.
So let me recap what I've heard while sitting here on hold on the phone.
Yeah.
that you have stunk up the studio with that god-awful air freshener that you bring in.
It is. It's also got some lemon, orange flower.
Yeah, let me describe it a little better for the listeners. Have you ever been in a hot Texaco bathroom in the summertime?
And who hasn't?
Have you ever smelled one of those cakes that they put in the men's room?
Oh, now that's not fair.
It's wafting into the newsroom, Dean.
That's what his canned perfume smells
no,
like.
No, it's beautiful. Cashmere Woods
oh,
by Glade.
Oh, my God, it's disgusting. I'm 2,000 miles away, and I can taste it.
It's got some vanilla bean, oak moss, and jasmine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great.
So where are you? You
said you're 10W-40. It smells a little like 10W-40. Antifreeze.
Do you I'm sorry, are you a cologne
Tito's.
Guy? Are you a cologne guy? Do you wear cologne at all?
No, not really.
No? Okay, so you're really not a scent guy. See, I like scents.
You do wear too much cologne also. That is also true.
And I also burn incense at my house.
Yeah, one of the moments I'll never forget in my life was after the climb at Presidential Towers years ago. When, Jim very charitably did the full climb for the American Lung Association,
right.
Came back to the radio station to do a live report, sweaty, like he had just run the New York City, L.A., and Boston marathons all put together, and just sprayed some cologne over the sink.
Well, I had to. I didn't have my Cashmere Woods at the time. I would have sprayed that around. But, I mean, come on, it would have been rude to come in smelling like adrenaline.
Well, you smelled like adrenaline, that's for sure. So that's just the first part of what I heard on hold. And the second part of what I heard on hold was that you are mixing some Kool-Aid or something outside of your house in the slush.
Yes. I put some Mio.
I don't even have any idea what you're talking about. Mio? What's Mio?
You don't know what those water enhancers are? The little flavored water enhancers that you spray in water and make it taste good?
No.
Oh, Mio? No. Dean, get off your high horse. Go to the grocery store. There's a whole section.
Get off my high horse because I just drink plain water?
I can't believe it. I can't believe you don't know what Mio or water enhancers are. Oh, my gosh.
I've never heard of that in my life. When I want a glass of water or a bottle of water, I just have a glass of water.
Well, don't you like...
I don't put fancy stuff in it.
You don't like a flavored water?
No.
A little black cherry, as I said before, a little berry pomegranate?
Sounds disgusting to me.
Well, you seem like you're in your usual happy Sunday mood.
It sounds number one, it sounds disgusting. Number two, to mix it in with the slush and snow and the poodle that lives next door to you is not a combination that in any way sounds delicious.
I didn't say that people were actually going to do it. I just thought it was kind of a neat idea. Just as, for people walking along, it's kind of boring when you're walking in the winter. This might have been a fun little thing for them to see, some colored snow.
Yeah, well, who doesn't want to see that when they're outside? As Andy pointed out, thank goodness it wasn't lemon, number one.
Exactly.
But if I'm walking along in the snow and I see a big splotch of red, I think someone's been murdered in that house. I don't think, there's a delightful flavor treat.
Well, hey, different strokes. Hey, that's what a Slurpee is. That's what an Icy is. When you go to the theaters, don't you go to get a nice little raspberry blue Icy?
Actually, I don't, but it's... the idea of drinking it off of somebody's curb is not one. one that's appealing to me in any way.
I was taking a little creative license with that, Dean. I don't know if I really would suggest doing that. It was kind of
Yeah. Well, and then the third thing that I heard while I was on hold.
Well, at least you're paying.
I was on hold for. I don't want to say anything, but I was on hold for a pretty long time.
Well, why didn't you come on? I was waiting for you.
I've been here from, I was listening to the Sinatra show. I've been on hold so long.
Oh, okay. Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
And then I heard that this show, this collector show, came to your house after they stole the idea from the morning news.
That's true.
they stole the idea because nobody has ever done that before, gone to somebody's house to show a collection. That was the first time it's ever been done in the history of television.
Wow.
On the WGN morning news. But I want to know that when Blair came to your house, did you put her in the dungeon like you did us when we came?
No, Blair had her own room. She had a nice little spare bedroom there where she had a nice mirror and a nice chair.
Yeah,
and
we
nice
didn't have that. We didn't have any of that.
No, I put you in the dungeon and I said I threw you down some lotion. And Dean rubs the lotion.
I beg your pardon?
Well, don't you remember from Silence of the Lambs in the dungeon?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Dean. Come on. Where are you at today? Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Well, I have to take a quick break. I know you're going to try get me.
it's been a really interesting kickoff of the show today. Really.
Well, Dean, I always try to make things fun, interesting, and at the very least, different. But at the same time, in the same spirit of a Dean Richards.
Well, it's interesting. I'll definitely say that. I only hope that...
See?
I only hope that that when we get done talking that I can be the first one to text in, who's that guy filling in?
Oh, believe me, you're not. I've already, believe me, the text, I can't even touch the screen, it's hot.
So what do you have planned for the show today? I heard you had Mike Hamernick on the show.
That'll kill
about 5 minutes. What else do you have?
I've got Mike Hamernick. I've got Blair. We're going to talk in the Pop Culture Club about the SAG Awards today. And the premiere of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. We're going to talk a little royal talk. Spoiled brats or progressive pair, Harry and Meghan. And I'm also going to talk about one of my favorite desserts, blackberry cobbler. It's a full show, Dave.
Oh, that sounds good. It sounds like you've actually done some preparation today.
I certainly have, per usual.
That's very nice.
Yeah, so you have nothing to worry about. I will not order a pizza. I know that you always get...
There's pizza down the hall.
Is there already? Yeah. Well, Dean always gets, like I'm babysitting his audience and his time slot. But I don't worry. I'm not going to call my boyfriend. He's not coming over. I'm not going to order pizza. We're not going to watch a movie. I'm going to take care of your audience.
You're not going to call your boyfriend?
that's what happens with babysitters. Don't you get paranoid?
It never occurred to me that that's what his situation was.
Well, look, Dean, you've done a nice job of getting me off. I've got like three breaks to make up here. We miss you.
You want to know where I am?
Well, I did. I asked you that 20 minutes ago, and you blew me off on that question. You want to hang on?
I just wanted to point out, a few things that my observations.
Why don't you hang on? Why don't you hang on?
Hearing so far. Yeah, I really don't have time to hang on.
Oh, well,
as you mentioned, this is a big awards weekend. I'm in Los Angeles. This is a big awards weekend. The Producers Guild Awards were last night, and the movie 1917 won as Best Picture from the Producers Guild, which is the most accurate indicator of what could happen at the Oscars. I've been saying that the movie 1917 is my favorite movie from last year, and the Producers Guild gave it a huge boost last night. It won a Golden Globe. So we'll see what happens. It probably won't win at the Screen Actors Guild Award because that's an award show tonight for actors from actors, and there really aren't any big stars in 1917. The movie is more driven on the story and the cinematography, but it's a glamour filled weekend here in Southern California, where I don't want to rub it in, but I am going to rub it in. It's 55 degrees here right now.
My God, it's like 5 here.
It's very nice. I got out right before that big snowstorm on Friday. So
it's one of those days where you just looks cold when you look outside. One of those Chicago winter cold. There's nobody on the streets because it's just cold.
Yeah, it's January, so
yeah,
almost February.
Well, Dean, I do have to run really because Ashley is looking at me with her eyes.
Then today, I'm gonna probably go around, do.
I'm playing you off, Dean.
Probably do a little sightseeing today. I have pretty much my afternoon is free today.
And we'll be back right after this. No switching. So, is that Dean? Is that Dean? Is he on?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Oh, I thought
you were talking to me.
Yeah, I thought you were still there.
I was. I was just taking a breath.
Oh, okay.
I've been talking for the last 3 minutes.
Oh, you have. That's right. You really can't hear when I play you off, can you?
Yeah, and then I heard a Cars for Kids commercial, and I like to sing along.
Oh, there you go. Of course, yeah. Of course. So you are in L.A. When do you come home?
Yeah, I don't think that's really any of your business.
Oh, okay. Well, Jim Toronto filling in for Dean, but of course, when Dean is away, he's never far away. He's on the line with us from some mystery location in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so you said the weather is nice there, and you'll be coming home, I would assume, sometime this week, and hopefully when you come home.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I was in the mid-70s yesterday. It was really nice.
Sun out and everything.
Yeah. But I still wouldn't trade it for being in Chicago.
Oh, look at you.
No matter how bad the weather is, no place like home, number one. But I could never live out here. I don't know how people...
Oh, really?
The weather's so nice. The weather's not that nice. They have earthquakes here.
They do have earthquakes.
Yeah, they have earthquakes. They've had like crazy rain out here this year. It's crazy. California's going to fall into the ocean. So.
Oh, you're one of those. Okay, you're not a flat earther, but you are a California will break off to the off of the mainland.
Well, I don't know if that's my theory on geology. That's what I'm hoping will happen.
So, have you did you say hi to Shwani and Andy, your cohorts here?
No, I have not. I have not said good morning to them because you haven't stopped talking about air freshener for the last half hour.
We did leave the room.
We left.
They don't
I apologize that you guys, you guys have to put up with that. Why, are you spraying it right into the microphone?
He did.
Come on, it's theater of the mind.
Oh, and it's in the production room down the hall.
Ugh, it's disgusting. Are you kidding me? They can smell it over at Tribune Tower.
Fire station next door is on alert.
And there's nobody.
The security guys came upstairs wondering what the mystery odor was.
There's nobody even in Tribune Tower, and they can still smell it there.
That's the irony of it all. It just lowered the property value there down to $2 million per unit instead of $3
million. From like $4 million.
Well, Dean, did you want to stick around and we can just have Shwani do his far flung? You want to take part in that, or do you want to
That's the main reason that I hung on the phone, because if there's one thing that I don't want to miss no matter where I am, it's America's favorite feature that's heard Sunday morning. It's the Dave Schwann and the far-flung forecast.
Right. So, why don't, Shwani, take it away.
I will.
You have the music? Don't you have the music to play?
That'll do. Today we go out west, not as far west as you are, Dean, but we go west to Richfield, Utah. Richfield, Utah is about 100 miles south of Salt Lake City. Population 7,551. It's off Interstate 70.
Ah, good.
There's been a lot of activity there for the last 7,000 years. Native cultures living there 7,000 years ago. But we mention Richfield, Utah today because it is the home of one man named Walter Frederick Morrison. Does Walter Frederick Morrison do anything for you?
Walter Frederick Morrison.
Frederick Morrison.
No.
Does that do anything for you?
No, it does not.
Well, okay. Way back...
I'm intrigued. I'll say that I'm intrigued.
Way back in 1947, he and his fiancée at the time were tossing around a popcorn can lid on a beach in Santa Monica.
Hey, that's where Dean is.
Some people got the idea. They said, that looks like fun. Well, one thing led to another, and Walter Frederick Morrison and his partner in business, Warren Francione, designed a thing which eventually became the Frisbee.
Oh!
And on January 23rd, 1957, a company named Wham-O started producing the first Frisbee. So on this coming Thursday's date, January 23rd, in 1957, Wham-O produced the Frisbees, first invented by one Walter Frederick Morrison, who, by the way, is a distant cousin of a man named Marion Morrison.
I was going to say, that's John Wayne.
Better known as John Wayne.
Yeah. So wait a minute. So he threw on a popcorn top?
He and you know, popcorn the, lids, the lids that you see on the great big popcorn tins that you see around Christmas time. He and his wife or girlfriend at the time were just having some fun throwing that around, sailing it through the air. And someone offered him 25 cents for it. And he thought, maybe we can make some money.
So it wasn't like, so often an inventor's name becomes the name of the
product.
But this was not made by, like, you know, Frank Frisbee.
No, it wasn't. The Frisbee name came about through another someone who perhaps had a similar idea, and eventually, you know, to speed up the story here, Wham-O had the rights then as now to produce Frisbee.
I loved Wham-O products back in the 70s.
Yeah, great.
They had the slip-ins.
Some of the other ones.
Oh, the slip Slinky. And slide. Remember Slinky and slip
Slinky
and slide?
And slip and slide, yeah.
You remember you put that... don't you love some of the things we spent our money on? It was basically a piece of plastic that you put water on and you slid on your grass.
Right, and almost always you have some sort of injury.
Oh, yeah, because nobody's grass is flat. Oh, that was...
And then they were, you know, like rocks underneath them.
There was no such thing as child safety back in the 70s and 60s. I can't believe we're standing here. We should all be dead. We should never have survived that decade.
Well, and I got to say, nobody was a bigger fan of the Slinky than me. I have a Slinky in my office. I love it. It's a good tension. You know, you just sit there and go back and forth with the Slinky back and forth. It's a nice.
You remember the little jingle? Do you remember
it's the Slinky? Jingle? It's Slinky. It's fun. It's a wonderful toy. It's Slinky. It's Slinky. It's fun for a girl
and boy.
It's a fun for a girl and a boy. It's
Everyone
fun.
Has a Slinky. You ought to get a Slinky.
Yeah. Slinky. I used to like the intro.
Something too. Like it walks downstairs.
What walks downstairs? An owner in pairs and makes a slinkity sound. A thing, a marvelous thing. Everyone knows a Slinky.
I used to love it. My brothers made fun of me. I have three older brothers. You know, they whatever they were doing, you know, building motorcycles or something, and little Dean's in the corner with his little stupid Slinky.
Oh, well, I used
was
to
get a sponsor on your pretend radio station.
by
Wham-O.
One of my brothers to this day said he says that if there was any stupid toy, Dean would buy it.
Well, of course, you had Silly Putty and
the Woolworths. Yeah. Silly Putty. You kidding? Yeah.
Silly Putty and Slinkies. Now, the funny thing is, in the 80s and 90s, what I did not like was that they made plastic versions that were of different colors of the Slinky. You got to have the metallic Slinky, the one that you could cut your finger on.
Right. If there's not a chance that you're going to get, you know, tetanus from it.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely, before the Slinky, that you have to, I think before you bought a Slinky, there was always a nurse in the Kreskies or in the Woolworths.
You had to get a tetanus shot.
Yeah. They gave you the shot right before you bought it.
For the dangerous sharp metal toys that you were about to buy.
Yeah. Once again, in the 70s.
Oh, I used to love a Slinky.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, and then everybody talks about the most dangerous toy of all, which was Jarts.
We had Jarts in the backyard.
I mean, that literally was a deadly projectile.
you guys' families apparently had more money than we did. We just actually threw knives at each other.
Well, that was the Richard Circus Act, wasn't it?
Yeah. Right. That's the curse of being the youngest of four boys, that you were always the guy that they threw the knives at for practice.
I always heard your mom and dad were excellent. They put Dean in that thing. And
right. Up against the wall with the, it had the, you know, the human body form, like the, you know, it was already drawn on there. So when you got killed, when you got stabbed, right, and the police showed up, they didn't have to draw their own human form.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. That's why Dean talks about entertainment, because early in his career, he was entertainment.
Right. We did, we were called the Dangerous Four.
Dean's Dangerous Four.
Yeah, well, I wasn't, I was just, you know, one of four. It was a family act.
Can I give the official temperature reading in Richfield, Utah today?
Oh, sure.
A little bit warmer there. Sunny and 19 above.
Ah, it's a heat wave there.
It's a heat wave there, yeah.
Well, thank you to Ebenezer Morrison, whatever you said his name was.
Walter Frederick Marion Morrison.
Yeah. Howard Morrison. Yeah.
Cousin of Marion Morrison.
Thank you.
Jim Morrison.
Thank you for basically throwing garbage back and forth to your girlfriend, you know, refuse, and lucking into. I used to love the Frisbee. I was pretty good at Frisbees. Did you guys like, were you Frisbee throwers back in the day?
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's funny though.
I wasn't very good at it.
It's
but
not,
I liked
yeah,
it.
To your point there, Dave, it's not that easy. You can't just fling it. You have to have some nice wrist action.
Yep, you do.
And I used to like
take
when people.
Some skill.
I like when people used to cup it. They used to like cup it in their arm, like in the little round part of your arm, and then fling it. They just didn't do the wrist. They would. Some people would actually almost embrace the Frisbee and then ricochet it out.
They'd get a running start too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was great. I remember you know, years ago when I first met Jim Toronto. And we would go out to a Grand Park and play Frisbee, and he could catch it in his mouth.
Well, I used to fetch.
He used to catch it in his mouth and bring it back to me. I'd give him a treat.
And we would also play Frolf, Frisbee Golf. Oh, Dean, we were not supposed to talk about those early days when we first met. I thought that was just between you and me.
Well, you know, sometimes good memories, you can't hold them back.
Yeah, you can't. Well, Dino, look, you've already put me behind throughout the show. I appreciate that, but I have to catch up. It's always good to talk to you. You're in L.A. Hopefully you'll come back soon. Safe travels to you. Schwani, thank you so much for the far flung.
As usual.
That was a good one. I don't know where that. I never would have thought that the Frisbee. You figured the Frisbee had to have been invented somewhere near a beach.
Well, right, yeah.
Yeah, you would never think.
The idea for it came from there.
Yeah, but you never think, like, in Utah, which I always have the view, you always think of Utah as being very conservative with the Mormons and everything. And here's this fun-loving guy, you know, out in Utah.
Are you saying that Mormons are not fun-loving people?
No, I'm just saying, when you think of a Frisbee, you think of an L.A. beach. Like you said, he was on the beach of Santa Monica. You wouldn't think of someone from Utah, you know, coming up with it.
People don't dance doesn't mean they're not fun.
Okay, Mr. Footloose.
Just because people don't drink soft drinks doesn't mean that they don't know how to have a good time.
Oh, Dino.
With their carrot juice.
Dino Reno. Look at you. He's sitting there right now in his hotel room, big white robe, big fluffy white robe.
I would never touch anything that's in this room.
Are you wearing the slippers?
No, I don't put anything on that's in the room.
I'm
practically in one of those hazmat suits when I go to a hotel room.
No, see, I picture Dean right now sitting with the white robe, the white slippers, and the shower cap. You know, the clear shower cap.
Don't bring up the shower cap.
And sipping.
Don't bring up the shower.
And cap. Sipping a mimosa.
All since Shawnee brought it up,
no,
that I have the most incriminating pictures of Shawnee from we were in Greektown back in the day. This was quite a long time ago.
Opa.
And I have some incriminating pictures of Shawnee.
Ooh.
That, as I've said many times, that if you ever hear that I died, you
don't you have
be
some spots to play, Elton?
Those photographs. You better be the first one to get those pictures out of my house.
How's that, Schwani? Should I play them off? I'm taking care of you, Dave. Hey, Dino, are you still there?
Sure.
Well, thank you.
Something more interesting to do on the show?
No, nothing more. Just get back to your mimosa. I got to run. I got some spots. I got a show to do here. I got to keep up the quality that you do every Sunday. So we've had fun, we've had frivolity, and now it's back to professional radio starting at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, coming up in a break, Jim's going to talk about his 900th Elton John show that he's been to.
Hey, we're coming up on 200, sir. Very excited about that.
It's amazing.
Okay, Dino, we will talk to you soon.
Hey, well, listen, have a fun show, guys. To Andy and to Shawnee, sorry. That's all I can say is sorry.
Don't worry. It'll be over in 3 hours.
Yeah, right. I'll see everybody next week.
Okay, great, Dean. Thanks a lot. We'll take a quick break here. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We just had a nice little chat with Dean, and he always does what he can to get me off schedule. But I promise for the next 3 hours, we will be on schedule and providing you the same quality entertainment and information that Dean provides to you every Sunday morning. As I said, after the 10 o'clock news, we will talk to Mike Hammernick. About the weather and what's going on. Give us a little look into the future this week. Later on, I also want to talk to sports guy Andy Mazur. Interesting stuff. Baseball hasn't even thrown its first pitch, and baseball is making more headlines than football, which is in the midst of its Super Bowl contention today and then the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. But baseball is making news with a huge sign stealing scandal. So I'd like to talk to Andy about that. We're going to talk to Blair from Facts of Life, Lisa Welchel, who hosts the show Collector's Call here in Chicago on Channel 23 MeTV. We'll talk about her hosting that show as its second season has just debuted. And then later on, we'll go to the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. We'll be talking about the SAG Awards, which are on tonight, the season premiere of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David's great, great comedy show back on HBO starting tonight. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees were announced, and some interesting, not only selections, but also some very interesting snubs. So we'll talk a little about that. And later on in the show, of course, we have to talk about the Royals, Harry and Meghan, who, of course, in the last week or so, have created a stir around the world with their decision to step down from their official royal duty. So my question is going to be to Emily Arminetti, who is a regular contributor on my podcast and a major fan of the Royals and a big, big royal watcher. We'll talk to her and get her insights and her opinions on just what is behind the Harry and Meghan Megxit, if you will. Are they a progressive couple, a progressive pair, or are they a couple of spoiled royals? So we'll talk about that. And anything else you want to talk about, phone is always open here. So whatever we're talking about, if you want to join in the mix or you want to text, phone number is 312-981-7200. What I wanted to also mention, I couldn't believe this. Real quickly, just before we go to the news, I saw this story. In 2019, the TSA at airports around the country confiscated almost 4,500 guns. And 90% of those guns that they confiscated were loaded. I don't know the breakdown. I don't know if they were in more areas of the country where guns are a part of the culture or not. But 4,500 guns to be confiscated at an airport. I'm worried about if I bought too much mouthwash. Is it in a 4 ounce container or
you
a 3 ounce?
You bring a room spray with you when you fly?
Well, of course. I mean, I have to bring my I actually have to put that. I put that in my checked luggage.
Yeah.
So this way they won't confiscate it.
Seriously, do you?
Well, I'm going to a hotel room. I have to have my scent with me.
Okay.
Cashmere Woods, of course. But can you believe that? 4,500 guns confiscated last year by TSA, and 90% of those were loaded. Wow, that's just a staggering, staggering thing. Anyway, Jim Toronto with you here, filling in for Dean Richards. We're going to, as I said, send things off to Davey Schwann, and we got a full show for you, so take it away, Dave.
Changing the weather, changing the weather, something's happening.
Jim Toronto with you here this morning. Good morning. Welcome to WGN 720 AM in Chicago. Elton Jim filling in for Dean Richards this morning, but we always have many of the cornerstones of a Dean Richards Sunday morning show, not only Schwani in the newsroom and Andy Mazur in the sports department, but also from the WGN Weather Center. Why is my microphone dead? Well, am I on now? My mic died for some reason. What's that? What's that? Oh, wow, that was wild. Okay. But we have Mike Hamernick on. Mike, are you there?
Hey, Jim, I'm here.
Yeah, wow, my mic just went off for some reason there, but I'm back, and I guess. So.
One of those mornings.
So
live
radio. That's what you love about it. So this is, as I said before, I feel so sorry for Tom Skilling because this is his Super Bowl.
Yeah, in a way.
And he's away. You know, he's been sitting here for a mostly tepid and mild winter when he should be excited about snow and sleet and hail and all those great weather things that happen in a Chicago winter. And just when we start to get some interesting weather, Tom leaves for vacation.
Well, I think he was out of town for the snow and ice on Friday night, but I think he's back in town now.
Oh, is he
cold,
back?
So,
oh,
yeah.
Okay. Okay, very good.
The rumor is he's back in town. I think he's back to work tomorrow.
Oh, okay, very good. But I just saw that, I was watching.
Sure.
WGN, I saw you, I saw Demetrius, and I was like, poor Tom! There's all these great little weather things going on, and Tom's not here to tell us about them, but you must have had fun the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been fun. You like a little bit of winter weather every now and then to break up the monotony, but I didn't mind the mild stretch of weather either. You know, there was a stretch there 26 or 27 days in a row where we were above normal temperature-wise, but of course that streak has come to an end with the storm we had over the weekend and now the very cold air, but it's not going to stick around very long. You know, this is a quick blast of Arctic air that's going to hang around for about 48 hours, and then it's back to a more moderate brand of cold for the rest of the week.
Now, I have a quick question. So yesterday was a very interesting day. I've lived in Chicago my entire life, and okay. I've seen some crazy weather, major blizzards in April and 65 degrees at Christmas. So what I found so interesting was how the heck did that change happen? And I have to say kudos to you because I was watching you in the morning and you said around 4 o'clock the temperature is going to drop dramatically.
Yeah, crash, I think I said.
Yeah, and sure enough, I was looking outside and all of a sudden I could feel that I was inside my house and I could still feel a difference happening. Yeah. And I look at the clock and I'm like, oh my gosh. He said around 4 o'clock. So my question is, in the midst of this relatively like a thaw that was going on, because I was out there kind of, as I said earlier, pushing the slush, how could the blast like that come out of nowhere? What happens?
Well, it came from we call those Arctic or polar fronts, the very sharp cold fronts that at this time of the year, they maintain their strength and they don't weaken much as they move south because there's really nothing to warm them up. And you get some pretty dramatic temperature drops. I think we saw a drop of about 15 to 20 degrees in a couple of hours yesterday. And when you couple in the wind that was associated with the front.
Very windy yesterday.
Yeah, made it feel even colder. So, the feels like temperature drop may have been, 30 degrees. That's what it felt like. But, this time of the year, once in a while, we get these polar Arctic fronts that produce that steep temperature drop, and it's rather dramatic when it gets that cold that quickly. Sometimes we'll get pneumonia fronts in the summer or spring off the lake, and you can have a 15 or 20 degree temperature drop. But when it goes from 30 to 10 in a heartbeat, then that is pretty dramatic.
Now, I'm probably showing my ignorance here, but in the battle between cold air and warm air, does cold air win? Because it sounds as if the cold air is just barreling through and the warm air just lays down its arms. It can't stop anything.
It all depends on the steering currents aloft. That's what really drives everything in weather is actually what's going on up at 15, 20, 30, 40,000 feet. And that's why we send up weather balloons you know, twice a day from stations all over the country. Really, you need to know, you have to know what's going on aloft to have any idea what's going to happen down at the surface. And we also have, you know, satellites that measure what's going on. You know, it conditions aloft. So it's really, you know, the key to weather forecasting, or one of the keys to know what's going on aloft, because that's what really drives the weather systems across the country.
Well, I had to say, your weather forecast yesterday was so spot on, and it was so helpful because you actually helped design my day. I got up very early. I was watching you on the news, and you were saying how around 4 o'clock or so, it was going to get much colder. So my next-door neighbor at 7 a.m. started snow blowing, right? But I said, wait a minute. Hammernick is saying that it's going to actually be warm and a thaw out here for several hours in the early morning.
A little melting,
even in the early afternoon. So I don't need to run out there. I'm going to let nature's thawing. You know, this way I'm not going to have to, you know, shovel as much. I'll let nature do half the work for me. So, you know,
and
thanks
to you.
You
don't have to wake up your neighbors, you know, at 7 in the morning with a snowblower.
Well, I'm old school. I'm still shoveling.
That's a special treat, yeah.
But, so I walked out there around 11 or so. I said, okay, now I've let the morning go by. In case this little Arctic blast comes a little earlier, I don't want to get caught off guard here, because I do want to get you know, as much of the snow out of the way. But so I went out there about 11. I got done about 12, and then just like you said, boom, the Arctic blast came. So once again, thank you so much.
I would have
been out there at 7 o'clock for no reason.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, you can time these things out pretty well, and yesterday worked out rather nicely. There was that little sweep spot between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. where we got some melting.
Yeah.
And that was the time to get the slush and everything off, because once we went into the deep freeze, we're not going to climb above freezing until, you know, later in the week sometimes.
Yeah, I'm at a point in my life now when if nature can do some of the work for me,
yeah,
I will take that. I will take that option. I don't pride myself, like I said, I have a snowblower, but to show how, you know, kind of backward I am, I have an electric snowblower. It's so small that I could probably do the snow easier by me shoveling it. And so I usually just shovel myself, but this was really heavy, and it was mostly, it was pushing. It wasn't even really, by the time I was out there, it wasn't even really snow.
No, some of the heaviest snow we've had.
Yeah.
It was rain on top of the snow. Impossible to move. So, it was a lot of work. And that takes me back to, you know, the Cubs got snowed out. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
I think it was last year.
Was it last year? And, you know, if they had just waited and let Mother Nature do the work, because the snow would have melted by 1 or 2 o'clock.
Exactly.
It did.
Yeah.
If they just waited, you know, and they didn't really even have to move anything.
Right.
Just let it melt, start the game at 3, and they would have gotten that game in. But, they decided to cancel early. But, yeah, it was that snow was going to be gone by early afternoon. And I think the White Sox did play that day.
I think they did too.
So, yeah. Sometimes, yeah, you let Mother Nature do the work.
Everything
takes care of itself.
So give us a quick little glance into the future.
Yeah, we've got it's a cold day today. Wind chills around 15 below now. Will improve to around zero later on this afternoon. Doesn't sound like much, but at least we're going in the right direction. Look for a high later on today, near 19 degrees. Occasional snow showers along the lakefront and a mix of sun and clouds inland. And if you're headed into Michigan, that's a trouble spot today. Western Michigan, Southwest Michigan, and extreme Northwest Indiana. Lake effect snow is going on there. High today, again, around 19, down to 10 tonight, and then 25 tomorrow. No real precip on the way until perhaps Thursday or Friday for most of the area. No major storm we have to worry about. But there will be some lake effect snow tonight, Jim, in northwest Indiana, maybe 1 to 3 inches in Porter County, maybe into Lake County. That could cause some travel troubles tonight and into tomorrow morning. But that's the next thing to worry about. But that's confined to northwest Indiana. Maybe some flurries or snow showers along the lakefront, but nothing major for the city.
Will we get any kind of a mini thaw?
Not much, you know.
Because I didn't do my problem is I didn't do my whole driveway.
Yeah.
And I've got some ruts in there, and I'm hoping that those ruts melt.
I hope we do. It looks like we'll get close to freezing or a little bit above. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So highs in the lower to middle 30s. And I'm hoping we stay above there because the next wave and this next system that moves in late this week looks like it's going to be rain. And if we're below freezing, that means freezing rain. So that's the next system to watch. But yeah, we're going to get close to freezing or a little bit above for several hours later in the week.
Very good. Well, Mike Hamernick from the WGN Weather Center, thank you not only for this forecast, but thank you for making my Saturday.
You're welcome. Anytime, Jim.
Great. Dave.
My pleasure.
Nice talking to you.
Hi, Jim.
They're Chicago, and they are real. So watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, and the whole team. Get real in the morning with the WGN Morning News Team, weekdays 4 to 10 a.m. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We'll take a quick break. Be back after this. Hey, no switching. Good morning. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Part of the Dean Richards crew, of course, is Andy Mazur on sports. I like to go to the sports department here, Andy.
All right, we're open.
You open for business?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, you're like Lucy, and I'm Charlie Brown. good grief, Andy. What are we going to do about sign stealing in baseball?
You know, sign stealing has been going on forever. I mean,
No kidding. This is no great shock. I think the depth of the technology.
That is the thing. Because, you know, it used to be a source of pride for a third base coach to be sitting in the dugout and study the other third base coach and know that, hey, that's a hit and run, or hey, that's a pitch out, or hey, he's stealing. And, you know, after a while, you could figure things out. But, you know, now it's gone to the depths of kind of like Bill Parcells in the NFL with video cameras and banging on trash cans.
Yeah, no kidding. And then supposedly buzzers. Yeah. I mean, this is like the scandals of the game shows of the 50s talking about cheating. But here's my question that I wanted to pose because we're hearing so much about, you know, of course, Jack McDowell, the former White Sox, says that there may have been some elaborate thing going on at Old Comiskey.
Yeah.
With the use of a camera, a toggle switch in the manager's office, and a light by the Gatorade sign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how crazy is all this? But as you said, you know, what I find interesting, you know, baseball has always kind of done a little wink when it comes to things like, you know, the spitball or sign stealing or some of these little, you know, unwritten things that it's like, you know, it happens. It's baseball's little dirty secret. We all know what goes on, but it's part of the game, and that's kind of the way they've always rationalized it. But I guess what my bigger question is, okay, so now this cheating scandal comes out, I mean, to the point where this is major in that it may have determined World Series champs.
Two times.
Twice, right. Yep. The Astros
and the Red Sox.
And the Red Sox. So here's my question. It's a decades old question now.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about Pete Rose?
You know, it's interesting you point that out because, you know, yeah, he was betting on baseball. He kind of admitted to that. He was betting on his own team, though, to win.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's something. These guys were altering the outcome of games by basically cheating within the game.
Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, I know that Pete Rose is a very polarizing figure. And I understand that, you know, betting, there's in every clubhouse, there's a big sign about no gambling. And it dates back to, once again, a local connection, the Black Sox scandal of 1919 when they threw the World Series. And I do believe that at that time, you know, it may have been a little overreaction by baseball in banning people, but at that time, baseball was not all that old.
Nope.
And so they wanted to make sure that the public felt that this was legitimate, that this wasn't some, you know, organized crime run sport, that there was legitimacy to it. I do think, now, wasn't the commissioner, what was that commissioner's name?
Landis.
Yeah, didn't he have like some mountain?
Kennesaw Mountain Landis.
Yeah, Kennesaw Mountain Landis. And he was a hard ass, and so he wanted to you know make it clear to the public that this was a travesty. We're going to ban people. I get it. I think that was a little overreaction. To your point, though, now here we are in 2019. Sports betting is legal,
right?
Betting is pretty much legal,
right?
So the stigma and the fear of betting that took place almost 100 years ago, times have changed.
They have. And, you know, if you take the Baseball Hall of Fame and you take it to its literal meaning, It's what a guy does on the field.
Exactly.
Because if you walked into that Hall of Fame and started clearing out all the guys that had had transgressions in their past, there might not be many people left in it.
Yeah, no, no kidding. So, maybe Ryan Sandberg.
Yeah. So I mean, you look at the way that Pete Rose affected the game when he played. Was he a dominant player of his generation? Absolutely. Oh. Did he leave as the all-time leader in hits? Absolutely. Did he win World Series with the Big Red Machine? Absolutely. Did he win a World Series with the Philadelphia Phillies? Yes, he did.
MVPs, All-Star. I mean, there's no question that his accomplishments on the field merit him. And to me, I actually believe that the Hall of Fame, without Pete, the hardest thing in baseball, in this sport, is to hit the ball.
Round ball, round bat.
Right. It's the hardest thing to do. Here's a guy who has the most hits. He has succeeded the most of any player in the history of the game. He has succeeded most at doing the hardest thing that to do is to get a hit. He's got the most hits in the history of the game. To your point as well, whatever cheating or gambling he did, this all took place when he was a manager.
Yep.
And as you said correctly, too, he bet on his team, not against his team. He wasn't pulling pitchers out or holding players back to win a bet.
Nope. He was trying to win.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can debate that. I think that a lot of people, especially sports writers, did not like, and players did not like Pete Rose.
He played hard.
He was arrogant.
Even in All-Star games.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he knocked Ray Fosse out of his career in the 1970 All-Star game. But he was arrogant. He was cocky. He was bigger than life. He played the game the way he wanted to play. Some people said he was a hot dog back when there was a such thing as a hot dog. But at the end of the day, he certainly helped the game and was one of the best players. To make him, you know, to ban him, I understand that. But from the Hall of Fame, it's his stuff on the field, as you said.
Yeah.
And it lessens the Hall of Fame. I've always wanted to go there, but you know, part of me why I haven't gone there is I was no great Pete Rose fan, but I just think it's fair. Times have changed, players have changed, attitudes have changed, and his numbers are so impressive that I have to think that unless there's some grudge going on here, I think we have to revisit, depending on what baseball really does. I don't think we've seen the last of this sign stealing thing.
Nope.
But I think they have to revisit the Pete Rose thing. At least, you know what, at least put him up for a vote. If he doesn't get the vote, he doesn't get the vote, but I think we need to revisit him.
You know, look, every generation's had its thing, you know, because Pete Rose was obviously, you know, the thing with the gambling. You look at the 90s and you got the steroid and the PED use. You look at now with a live ball. You look at before with a dead ball. You know, if you make the argument for Pete Rose, you kind of have to make the same kind of an argument for Barry Bonds, for Roger Clemens, for Sammy Sosa to some degree, that yes, it's illegal to be doing steroids, but baseball never really acknowledged it because fans were coming to the ballpark and the game was being rescued, basically, after the strike.
Definitely, yeah. I really think that we need to if you know, I have nothing against penalties and consequences. The only thing that I have a problem with is when they are not dealt out fairly.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, maybe when Pete Rose was banned, you know, 20 years or so ago, okay, that was fair. But now, as I said, times have changed, attitudes have changed, sports betting has changed in this country, and we've got now seemingly a lot worse scandals than what Pete Rose did. And I just think that if we're going to start to dish out penalties, either strong or even easy, we need to be fair. And I think Pete Rose, in this case now, in retrospect, 25 years later, maybe back then it was fair. But I think we need to revisit a lot of things here. So, yeah, I'm not surprised, as you said, you've been around baseball in locker rooms, and you know this stuff. And I played baseball for quite a few years. And I played with coaches of mine that played in minor league baseball. And they would tell me stories that were crazy about sign stealing and, you know, when a guy, you know, if a guy hit a home run, the next guy got knocked down. That was the way baseball was played back then. Yep. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
So, I was not surprised. I like the way baseball is acting like, oh, wow, what a shock this is. I just think, wow, talk about baseball players wearing buzzers on their body. So if it buzzes, they know a curveball is coming. And that's
You know, and Commissioner Manfred really had no choice.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a situation, too, you know, you talk about with technology that, you know, it continues to evolve. Now, they've approved the use of iPads during games. And you're allowed to have an iPad in the dugout.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to use it for, you know, the correct things. You can't be, you know, doing it to spy and to get signals from a camera. And it was an elaborate setup, if you believe all the things that happened, with the Astros banging on garbage cans and also, you know, with the buzzers that they were wearing. And, you know, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence around it as well. Obviously, the commissioner is much more privy to the things that were said in the interviews by A.J. Hinch and also some of the other players that were involved in the incidents. But, you know, you have no choice. And it's unfortunate to see guys lose jobs over these kind of things as well. But, right. You know, there are consequences to actions.
You have to have consequences. Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks, Andy.
You got it.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break here. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Good morning.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life.
Now I'll say it. Good morning. And welcome back. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, and you heard the theme there from Facts of Life, the TV show from the 80s with Mrs. Garrett and her boarding school of those scampy little girls, Blair and Joe and Tootie and Natalie and all the rest. But here we are in 2020, and there's a show on MeTV, Channel 23, locally here as well. You know, MeTV goes nationally. There's a show that is in its second season now. The new season just debuted last week on Sunday nights at 8:30, called Collector's Call, and it's a show about people showing off their collections, whether it is Barbie dolls or Winnie the Pooh or Elvis or maybe even Elton John. And it's interesting kind of show. I'm interested in it because I don't know when, but sometime in the next couple of months, I am going to appear on that show with my collection. And the host, of course, is the former Blair, Lisa Welchel. And she got involved with the show, and she is the host. It's, like I said, it's her second season. And she came to my house, and it was a very cool experience and everything. So I just thought we would maybe talk to Lisa to talk about the show. As I said, it just premiered last week. It'll be on tonight at 8:30 and every Sunday. And not only talk about the show itself, but then get a little behind the scenes of what it was like when she came to my house. So here's my interview that I recorded a little earlier this week with Lisa Welchel. So, Lisa, tell me now how, before we get into specifics, tell me how the heck you got involved with a show produced out of Chicago called Collector's Call.
Well, I got involved because I knew the producer and I had worked with him before. And I think he reached out to me because this is definitely a show about collections and it's about the items, but really it's also a show about the people and it's about their passion for holding on to their childhood. I have not met a collector yet whose collection was not in some way tied to hanging on to something that was tied to their heart and typically something that was tied to their childhood. And it's a perfect fit for MeTV. MeTV is memorable entertainment. It's memories that from our childhood. It's shows from our childhood that are lodged in our heart that we don't want to let go of. So it's a perfect fit for the network. And it's a perfect fit for me because I'm just by nature curious about people and their stories. And I think the producer knew that.
Now, are you a collector yourself at all? Is there anything that you, have sort of a, you know, and I'm not going to use the word obsession because I'm actually, a subject of one of your episodes here. So I'm not going to, say myself how obsessed I am.
Let's just use the word passion.
There you go.
It is passion, and we need that kind of passion in our lives.
But do you have any?
No, I think I. I am not a collector. I think I'm living vicariously through the collectors.
So the idea then appealed to you just because, did it sound good on paper? Did you, now that you've done a full season and now that you have taped the second season, is the show and what you expected and the people that you've met and the collections that you've seen, are they what you expected or have you been surprised?
I've really been surprised. There's some things that I anticipated. I mean, I knew it would be interesting. I knew my curiosity being such a big value of mine. I knew that it would be interesting. I didn't know it would be so educational. There's so many things that I've learned that I did not anticipate. I didn't know that I would appreciate the passion and what it takes to really have such a collection, the commitment that it has that goes into the collection. I really do have such a respect for each of the collectors. And as I said, I learned something with each collection and I love broadening my horizon.
Now you do have to do your homework because the show features collections that run the gamut in terms of the actual specific subject matters. Some things are based on childhood toys, for instance, things on music or things on movies. Being a collector myself, I really had no idea how wide the collecting world was until I started to talk to different people and heard that people just, I mean, haven't you seen, people will collect just about anything.
It's true. Well, actually, I don't actually have to do the homework. Two things. We bring in professional appraisers who do the homework, and they know their stuff. So they know what things are worth. They know the nuances of what makes something worth more than others. I also try not to do any homework. I don't want to know anything because I want to be curious. I want to really know, I want to ask the questions that the viewers at home, I want to be the liaison for the viewer at home. I want to be able to take the place of the person at home, ask so that I will just spontaneously ask the question that somebody at home would be thinking. And, so that if they're thinking, I wonder why they did that, or I wonder what that means, or why would they be collecting that? I want to ask that question spontaneously, and if I already have the answer, I wouldn't do that.
So you at least, but I mean, you certainly have a cursory kind of knowledge. Okay, we're going to somebody's house, they have an Elvis Presley collection, or they have a toy collection. So you have a certain idea before you start.
Yes, I do know if we're going to, if it's Star Wars or Barbie or Lego,
right,
or toys or Elton John or Beatles or Pac-Man or any of those things, yes.
Well, I have to say, though, that, and I don't know if it was then just your personal interest, but I was very impressed. Obviously, you came to my home to see my Elton John collection, and I was very impressed with your knowledge about Elton John. So I didn't know if that was just your personal knowledge that you brought to the table or that you had done some homework, but you mentioned a few things throughout the show that sort of turned my head because...
Well, that's just my own, because I'm a fan of Elton John.
Okay,
Because we had an Elton John pinball machine in our house when my kids were little.
Oh, you did?
Because I love Bernie Taupin. Because I just seen Rocket Man. I wasn't a big rock and roll fan as a kid, but I liked his music. So yeah, that's just personal, and that's what makes the show so enjoyable for me. For the same reasons, I think the viewer, because a lot of these shows bring back my own memories and my own childhood, and so it has the same appeal to me is I think why the show is appealing to viewers.
So now that you have done the two seasons that are completed, and now the second season has debuted and will be showing for the next few months, I would assume, can you mention what some of the collections that you were most impressed about? Not even that they maybe have been something that you were interested in per se, but that were just impressive in terms of maybe just the quantity of things, or the depth of them, or the presentation and display? Are there some collections that really, in your mind, stand out even now after two seasons?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a great way you set that up, because there's lots of different ways to qualify that. One, for instance, was the James Bond screen-used vehicle. So this gentleman had a couple of airplane hangers of vehicles used in James Bond movies. So wow. He had a submarine and a tank, and, of course, the cool cars, but then he also had helicopters. And,
oh, my goodness.
From James Bond movies, and had an airplane hangar. And then there was a young man who had a Star Wars collection that was so huge. He had a 5-bedroom house and a basement, and he only used the kitchen and one bedroom as an actual living space. And then there was a guy who had Nike Air Jordans, and, one pair of shoes was worth $15,000.
Wow.
And then there was a woman with Barbie collection that it was just one room, but it was 5 layered deep. So you would think, oh, wow, this is a tiny room, until you realize it's 5 layers. It's not a tiny room. It once was a large room.
Wow.
And then, of course, there's one woman who had her house full of Winnie the Pooh, and you think, wow, that's excessive, until you realize this is her second house. She owns the house next door. It was full of Winnie the Pooh. She bought this house beside it because she outgrew the other house. So, some commitment here.
Well, by gosh, then by comparison, walking into my house must have walked in and said, "What's the big deal? Why are we here?"
Yeah, what a slacker. This guy's a slacker.
I mean, my gosh, he actually uses his living room and dining room and kitchen.
Right.
and there's no second house.
Right.
And we're not going to an airplane hangar. How boring is this?
Right. We could live here.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, to see some of these collections that she's talking about that will be on in the second season of Collector's Call on MeTV on Channel 23. The show airs every Sunday at 8:30. We'll take a quick break, and after that, I'll continue to talk to Lisa Welchel, who is, of course, Blair from Facts of Life. You may know her that, but now she's the host of Collector's Call. And in the second part of the interview, we talk a little bit, we take it behind the velvet ropes, because she came to my house this past summer to record an episode that will be airing sometime in the next couple of months. And so we'll give a little insight as to what it was like when she came to my house and saw my collection. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Good morning. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We'll be here till 1 o'clock. Pass things off to Pete McMurray. Right now, we'll continue our interview with Lisa Welchel, the host of Collector's Call, the show about collecting and collectors' amazing passions for what they love to surround themselves with. Some of them are here, right here in Chicago. The show is produced out of Chicago on MeTV on Channel 23. It's on every Sunday night. It'll be on tonight at 8:30. But the show has actually expanded this season to go all around the country. And so Lisa, though, talks about when she stopped by a certain Elton Jim's house. So Lisa, you came to my home here in the Chicago area last summer in August. And first, just so you know, the bedroom that you used for your hair and makeup has now been officially called the Blair Room.
That's so funny.
In our house, when we refer to the room, if like, where's the cat or where's that? Oh, it's in the Blair Room. Okay. So that's
it. I love it.
Yeah. My mom lived with us for a while, and it used to be called my mom's room, but it now has been officially christened the Blair Room because that's where you hung out.
How does your mom feel about that? I hope she doesn't know that.
No, she doesn't know.
Good.
But,
Good. You're a wise man.
Yes. Yes. So, and it was great to have you over. So, what I talked about a little in the before was you actually came to my episode with a little personal information, because you said you were an Elton John fan and actually had an Elton John pinball machine, which I also have in my collection. So that's pretty cool. So I guess my question is, coming to my collection with a little knowledge. What were your impressions before, during, and after?
Well, I was really impressed with your collection on a number of levels. And it is really true of so many of the collections that I come to. I learn something. I have a deeper appreciation of the collection. If it's a personality that is collecting, I usually have a deeper appreciation of that and the collector. But, of course, Elton John even more so. I was very, very touched by the picture that you had taken of his sons. I was very touched of the personal note that he wrote. I had not heard of the artist that you had, that huge painting that you have in your entryway.
Oh, yes, the Denny Dent. Denny Dent.
Oh, yes, very impressed by that. Who wouldn't be impressed by getting to put a pair of Elton John's glasses on right. and really seeing how blind the poor man is?
It's funny, he several years ago he had LASIK surgery, so he really doesn't even need glasses anymore.
Wow.
He does just wear sunglasses, but as you saw back then, the glasses that I have are from the mid-70s, and he was as blind as a bat.
Man, then that tells you how powerful LASIK surgery is.
Exactly.
Then. Yeah. Then how tiny Bernie Taupin must have been with that little shirt.
Right, exactly. Yes, yeah. Well, in fact, you do know now, and I should mention a little postscript to that. So, you were mentioning I took a couple of pictures of Elton John and his sons on stage in Las Vegas in 2018, and I sent those pictures to Elton, and he sent me this nice note back, which Lisa is referencing to. What I should mention is one of the two pictures that I did send him was published in his recent memoir.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I've got a picture and a photo credit in his new memoir that came out in October, and that was a New York Times bestseller.
Well, I mean, that's a stellar accomplishment for anyone, but it must be for such a fan as yourself. I mean, that's got to be such a meaningful accomplishment to have somebody that has brought you such joy to know that you have given someone who brought you so much joy to give them something that is so meaningful to them.
Yeah, no, I was blown away. They had contacted me earlier in the year last year and just let me know that those photos that I had taken were being considered, but they just wanted to know if they had my permission to use them if they wanted to. And certainly I said yes. And I did not hear back at all. That I heard initially from them in April, and the book was published and on the newsstands in October, in mid-October. And so I did not know until the day the book came out and someone sent me a Facebook posting and said, congratulations, because they had gotten the book and they'd seen the picture, and they must have went in the back to see who took the pictures in the photo credits, another major fan who would look at that kind of detail, and said, congratulations. And that's how I found out. So it was very cool to go to the bookstore that day, later in that day, and open the book up and see the picture that I took in that book. And to your point, that is certainly a huge highlight. And, that book now will become a part of his legacy and his history.
Right.
And so to know that I've contributed in even the smallest way still is a very cool kind of, thing to happen. So here's my other question to you now. In terms of the way that you walk in, the way the show is done, you come to people's homes or wherever they have their collections and you talk about it, you showcase it, there's an appraiser there. Is there, you mentioned earlier when we were talking that this is a part of people's childhoods. Most collections are born out of people's childhoods. Is that pretty much the most common thread that you have found through all the collectors, regardless of how passionate, regardless of how extravagant their collections may be. Do you find a common thread? Is it the childhood thread, or do you find other threads that are common amongst all the collectors on the show?
I'll say the most common is definitely the childhood thread. Whether it's a relationship from their childhood, like they went to see this Star Wars movie with their uncle when they were five, or watched this TV show with their mom when they were seven, or their brother played with this particular toy when they were six, or maybe it's a time in their life they remember coming home. It's something like that, a time in their life, something with their childhood. That's the most common thread. The other common thread is really just kind of the joy of the hunt, finding there's always a holy grail, there's always something trying to find something.
And that's the exact term that most collectors use, the holy grail. There is always one item, and that's the exact term that every collector uses.
Yeah, there's always something. There's another common thread is the community. There's whether it's the shows, the trade shows, or whether it's the online community, or whether there's different ways that the collectors all get together. But there seems to be, even though everybody's trying to all try to find the same thing, there does seem to be some camaraderie of the community, which I think is really important. Somebody asked me the other day on a television show about, what's the difference in collecting and hoarding, and hoarders get a bad name, and make a case for collecting. And, I do think that one of the big things to make a case for collecting is that we need purpose, we need passion, we need relationships. And the community is in the big plus column for collecting, because we do need relationships. And when you share a common goal like that, and you can all get together and you have something in common like that, and you share that passion that nobody else may understand it, but you get each other. That's important.
Yeah, there's no question. In fact, what's interesting, even in my little world of the Elton John collecting, to your point, which is well said, what's interesting is that even within a specific subject matter of collecting, people will collect certain things more than others. Like, for instance, in the Elton John world, some people just collect vinyl. They won't collect everything he has. They'll just, for instance, collect the vinyl albums and the vinyl 45s. Other people will say, well, my collection, I just like to have all the magazines or newspaper articles dating back to 1970 or whenever. And so theirs is more of a paper aspect. I have a friend of mine who has perhaps the largest video collection of anybody in the world. He just collects video. Different snippets of him being on television or on different shows and things like that. So that's what's interesting too within the collecting world, even within a certain subject. Then there are sub subjects of collecting that people will only focus on. So it really is kind of an interesting dynamic, because I can have a big collection and somebody I know has a big collection, but we may both collect Elton John things, but we collect different things. So we're actually even not in competition with one another.
Exactly. Which makes it really, really great, because you can make trades, you can look out for each other. Although I have noticed too, there really is, even though people are, even if you are kind of looking out for the same thing, there doesn't seem to be the dog eat dog kind of world in collecting. People really do seem to really care about each other and be looking out for each other.
Well, I think the fact of the matter, and certainly the internet has changed the dynamic, but I think at the heart of what you're saying is that you are happy to know that there's someone that shares, you mentioned before, that shares your passion.